We're speaking now with Sage Dixon, and he is our state representative for District 1. Sage, thank you for being here.
Absolutely, Chris. It's always a pleasure.
So you were first elected in 2014, and we were just trying to do the math here. That means you're coming into the ninth year. You're going down to Boise for a session of the legislature.
Correct. It's been a long time now.
Yeah. And you know what that brings to mind? What's your seniority? Where are you at in the seniority in the House of Representatives?
Oh, goodness. I don't know the exact number, but certainly I've moved up over the years. And with the changes that we've had in this last election, I would probably say I'm at least in the top 15, if not the top 10 right now.
Yeah. It's because there's a bunch of new ones coming
correct,
in.
Correct.
I want to ask you a question about that. But before we do that, a lot of the work the legislature is done in committee. What committees are you on?
Okay, my committees are going to remain the same as they have been for the past two terms, essentially. So for the past 4 years, my morning committee will still be revenue and taxation. My afternoon committees, because we go odd days and even days, so we can serve in two committees in the afternoon, will continue to be business and then transportation. I chaired the business committee for 4 years, but I now have a new role in the legislature. I was elected to be assistant majority leader. So that means I can no longer be a chairman, but have larger responsibility among the majority caucus as a whole now, and possibly, I mean, we can get into that later if you'd like as well, but that would preclude me from chairing, but keeping those committees the same that I've had for the past 4 years.
So assistant majority leader.
Yes.
That sounds like it's got to give you some sway down there.
I don't know if there's sway. It's there's a kind of a question mark, to be honest, because it's an undefined role other than if the majority leader isn't present when we're in our floor session, I then have to take those duties in going through the orders of business on the floor. Also, when we go into our amending order, it traditionally has been the assistant majority leader who then goes up into the speaker's seat and becomes chairman of the whole body. It's called the committee of the whole. So when we go into the amending order, I would do that role as well. Other than that, I could possibly be a gopher for the speaker and the majority leader. I will be involved in the conversations with the Senate and the governor, which is one reason why I was seeking that position, just to try and have a little more influence on the process and represent our body and our district in a larger way.
Well, you know, speaking as North Idahoan, we want our representatives to have influence down there.
Well, I think I'm still working on that.
Well, this brings to mind another committee that you were on last year, and I assume you're on it this year. Didn't you chair the Ethics Committee last year?
I did, yes.
And that was kind of a hot seat.
It certainly was.
Yeah, because there were a couple of cases there that you guys had to wrangle with.
Right.
Are you going to have that role again this session?
No, as a member of leadership, I cannot serve on the Ethics Committee, let alone as chairman of that as well. So some people say that's why I ran for that position, so I couldn't be chosen. But I always thought it as a matter of honor, or a badge of honor, if you will, that my peers trusted me to serve in that position. Mm-hmm. And as chairman, I received the most votes. So I thought that was okay, and I appreciated that role, mm-hmm. but can't do that again.
Yeah, and it did seem like there were a couple of questions that the Ethics Committee had to deal with last year that were unusual, like that I haven't really noticed coming through the legislature in past recent history.
Yeah, most of that would have stemmed from the two ethics committees or ethics hearings that we had to have, public ethics hearings. So there's always a lot of work, and everything's confidential until it goes to the public phase in doing that. So we can assume there's work that goes on that never really comes to light, and some things that are just political attacks, if you will, that the committee sometimes would conceivably brush off and we don't hear it. But because of those two hearings, there were some amendments that we needed to make to our ethics rule to try and make it a little more clear process and linear process than what we had. And so we did those changes as well.
And it's beyond the scope of this conversation to talk about what those cases were last year. But I can see how that would be a certain position that'd be easy to let go of. Yeah.
Most of the fallout came in the primary. I think a lot of the angst towards me as chairman and political alliances is why I was targeted in the primary throughout the state. Really, it was odd to see the people coming against me, but that's just what happens in those situations, and I'm thankful to still be representing District 1.
Well, it's kind of a segue to my next question. So there are a lot of new legislators coming in, and you know, there's a spectrum of political philosophy there. Do you expect any changes in the direction of the legislature versus the last couple of sessions?
I think the general feeling is the Senate has become far more conservative than it's been in the past. And some of the senators that were making decisions. The House has been pretty conservative for the past 8 years or so, even before that. And a lot of the legislation that we had passed in the House would get stymied in the Senate, either no hearing at all, or if it passed, there were some issues of a governor veto, and we didn't get support from the Senate on doing that. So a handful of the senators that were on the governor's side or holding up the legislation are no longer there. And the people that replaced them are pretty strict conservatives, if you will, from my understanding. I haven't met all of them. So that will change the dynamic a little bit. The House moderated a little bit. Those stronger conservatives from the eastern part of the state, they didn't win their reelection over there. So some of the members coming into our body would be considered more moderate. I still think we have a conservative majority. So some of that legislation should still pass. But then it comes down to committee chairmen and committee makeups. And the Senate Education Committee, for example, looks very, very conservative. Our House one, maybe not so much anymore. We'll have to see what happens there. But there's still all those checks and balances in our bicameral system going on. Mm-hmm. I do expect some of that legislation that was stymied to at least get hearings. Mm-hmm. And we'll have to see what the governor does at that point. Mm-hmm. But not too much change in the House, to a little bit. Mm-hmm. We'll have some more debates probably and different things coming out of committees, but the Senate is where the big change happened.
Mm-hmm. Well, what are some of the big issues you expect the legislature to take up this year?
Property taxes. Again, that's still a really large issue. And the assessments that will be coming out next year, I believe, will still be for where we are right now. And even though the market has cooled this year, what I've been told is that we still should expect maybe an increase in our assessments next year because it lags a little bit what they're looking at with their comparables and things. So that is a large topic still. There's been a couple legislators, both a House member and a Senate member from the southern part of the state that have been working on legislation to index the homeowners exemption there. Some people aren't comfortable with that, so we'll have a debate on that, but that is one solution so that you're getting a larger homeowner's exemption when the value goes up. So it's not static at that $200,000 or $300,000.
So what would it specifically be indexed to?
The value of the home, not to GDP or consumer price index or anything. So if your home is going up exponentially, then it would be almost a percentage rather than a static homeowner's exemption. From what I understand, I haven't seen the legislation. But that's what I've gleaned from conversations.
Okay, so it would be indexed to the amount of the percentage of increase.
Yes, and it might be the general increase in the area, not your specific home or something to that effect. Mm-hmm. I think that's how they're looking at it. I haven't seen it yet. They just put out last week an email to all the legislators saying, here's what we've got. Read it. Come on board if you want. They're looking for co-sponsors. They want to get it done early. Again, I know there's some pushback from different folks on that approach. I liked what we were trying to do at the end of the session, which is no property tax for owner-occupied homes in the first 5 acres. There was the offset in an increase in sales tax as well, and that gave a lot of the locals some heartburn about what that would look like for their income because they derive all the benefit from that revenue. Mm-hmm. We just set the policy in the state government. Mm-hmm. But I think that's a good way to go. I know a lot of other people do as well, so we'll have those discussions.
Yeah, I know that sales tax is considered a regressive tax, right, by some, but one plus of a sales tax is that visitors end up paying part of our tax burden.
Correct. And conceivably, that's a tax you can control, whereas is your property tax is not something you're controlled. It's what this county is applying to what they need to run the county government and doing that. And I think it's an unjust tax myself, which is why I was in favor of that approach. But that wasn't an easy conversation. It was way too big to do at the end of the session. Mm-hmm. But we'll see how that continues to move forward. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so potential tax relief in some form or another, that's going to be an issue. Yeah. Other big issues that might come up?
The school choice issue. There's been a number of states across the nation that have now implemented the education savings account. And Arizona and West Virginia are two of the largest ones, but there are 5 or 6 other states that are looking at doing that in this upcoming session. That's something we have been working on since I've been in the legislature, and it's not me specifically, but that's an issue I've been interested in. And that change in the Senate helps with that conversation because things that went across the rotunda didn't get heard at all in that case. But I know the governor's not in favor of it, so we'll see.
So school choice is where some tax money might be used as I'm not sure exactly what the what the format of this is, right. but might be used to offset costs for private school education?
Correct. Or... it is allowing the parents to direct their child's education through the money that the state is providing to each child for education. In the education savings account model, money would be deposited into an account for the parents to then direct that education. If they wanted public school, and that's fine. The money goes right to the public school. But if you have your digital learning academy, if that suits the child better, or even private school, yes. Mm-hmm. And some, we had a lot of pushback from the homeschooling community because they felt it was a door that would be open then for the state to come into their home, which most of them, 99% of them, don't want in doing that. But conceivably, depending on how it was written, homeschoolers could use that as well for the education of their children in doing that. It's different than a voucher. A voucher is the state sending money right to an institution or a provider. This education savings account goes to the parents, and then they decide how to do it. Mm-hmm. It could take other forms, Chris. We talked before about money following the child because education is so varied right now as well. Don't know where that conversation will go, but it is growing nationally, and it's been a conversation within the state that I think now will move forward.
So the argument against that I've seen is that it actually ends up taking money away from public schools. So that money's got to come from somewhere.
Right. What we developed in the past is it's a percentage. If we're putting in, say, $7,500 per child, you would get $5,500 to $6,000 or something to the parents so that other dollars would stay there because of a lot of the overhead costs that public schooling has to deal with. We're aware of that situation. It wouldn't necessarily be a one-to-one ratio in that sense. That's another conversation that's coming up a lot is new buildings and just maintenance on old buildings like we have in the rural areas. West Bonner, for years, I've been trying to work with them to try and get some sort of fund. There's some dollars. There's kind of a quiet fund that isn't used very much that could be used for ongoing maintenance in rural schools, mm-hmm. rather. But down in the south, the problem is construction of new buildings because of the growth they're having there and even in the Coeur d'Alene area. So I think that's another large topic of discussion with our ongoing surplus and the extra dollars that we're supposed to be putting in education that we passed during the special session. That's a big focus as well, mm-hmm. which I'm all in favor of.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We're going to run out of time before we know it, Sage. One question I do want to ask each of the legislators. So we have still a budget surplus, I believe. Right. We have a lot in a surplus fund, but I think we're still taking in more money than anticipated. Is that accurate?
From what I understand, yes. I haven't looked at the latest numbers.
So the question would be, how should the state treat this budget surplus?
Right. I think giving it back to the taxpaying public is a good way to do it. If we're getting revenue in excess of what we anticipate, then that means in some concepts we're taxing too much at that point. A lot of this is sales tax revenue and coming from visitors, as you said earlier, that are coming in, especially during COVID when we were a little more open than our neighboring states in doing that. But there's certainly things that we can apply that money to. We just passed, education is always something that said we need more money. It's always not that easy, but we just did pass legislation that's going to be putting a lot more money into education. So I'm thinking at this point, just returning it to the taxpayer. Transportation has a lot of money and is doing it the best they can. It's hard to find contractors now is the difficulty they're having. We've improved the wastewater with a lot of the ARPA funds that came through. For better or worse, it did go to some important things throughout the state. And then...
you just brought up something I would like to bring up. School buildings. Yes. I know you mentioned West Bonner County, but also the Lake Pend Oreille School District has got some aged buildings
they
that need to replace.
Right. So that's a fine place to put it as well, because I see that as part of our constitutional duty. Those buildings need to be safe and house all the children comfortably that we have. And that was part of that conversation that I said earlier. That's a good direction for it to go as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay, how do you expect to communicate with your constituents during the session? You're not around here. What's the best way for them to get in touch with you if they have a concern?
During session, it's emails. Either it's sdixon@house.idaho.gov or my campaign email is sage@sagedixon.com. People can send things there as well. Mm-hmm. My phone number is 208-610-4800. That's not always easy to take calls, but I'll try and get back to you in doing that. But because we're so busy... The emails are generally easier because I can get to those after hours, and then make them personal. Don't just click on a form letter, because those get kind of brushed to the side. We just don't have time when it's just a form letter. So if it's something you're really interested in, make sure it looks like a personal email, or put under the title exactly what you're concerned with in doing that. And that will help me know that it's somebody from my district that I need to pay attention to.
How many emails do you get?
We can get hundreds a day to sometimes upwards of 1,000.
Especially if there's a hot issue going
on. Right. And then a lot of that would be form emails where people are just mad and they'll click add my name. And that's why it's hard to weed through, though.
Yeah. Well, kind of my last question here. So we saw a lot of division during the election period. And from the tenor of the social media and letters, it seems to have raised some hard feelings among some, at least out there. How do you go about representing your constituents that do have differences with you here?
That's always been important to me. I think I've reiterated this multiple times when we've talked about this. It is my responsibility to represent everybody in this district, even if they didn't vote for me. So if there's an issue, and I think I've made this known in the years that I've served, that I'm happy to hear those issues. And if I feel it's a legitimate issue, I'm happy to work on it as well. But I'll always explain where I agree and why I don't agree or do in that case. So I think I'm open to everybody, or I'd like people to know that I'm open to hear their ideas and what they think is wrong. Mayor Ronstadt and I have worked on some things for Sandpoint that we don't agree on a lot of things politically, but it's important to the city. So I'm happy to hear that. And it's my job to represent the city and try and keep it whole. And so those, I'm happy to do that, Chris. And I hope people know that. Doesn't mean we're always going to agree. Doesn't mean I want to go work on that. But I try and make sure that I'm representing everybody and at least having that conversation.
Mm-hmm. Well, Sage Dixon, bang, we're done.
We're done.
We don't have enough time. State Representative for District 1, thank you for coming in and taking time to
talk
with us.
Thank you, Chris. I always enjoy it.